Hello, Gallatin Valley and online listeners. You are listening to KGVM, Bozeman Community Radio, broadcasting at 95.9 FM and streaming at kgvm.org. I'm Roxana, and this is Desert Oracle Radio Replay. This week, our weather has given us a taste of the next season to come. Cool temperatures, the turning of the leaves on some of the trees and lots of the shrubs, sandhill cranes gathering for migration, even the bugling of elk if you get a good place to hear it. Oh, and let's not forget our other antlered friends, the deer and moose. Well, the moon has gone from full to half pretty quickly, it seems. And the autumnal equinox is on deck for next Monday, the 22nd. Like I've said before, there are not that many old episodes of Desert Oracle Radio from Septembers of years past. And so far, no new one has been released this week. So I chose something a little unusual. From October 18th, 2022, recorded in West Village, New York City, here is John Lennon's UFO, sometime in New York City. Enjoy.
Now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Has fallen on the desert. To mark this season when the veil is thin. Dark working sorcerers who work the mind in this detested, most feared place where dark night welcomes wandering angst. Dark night from the eye, all function takes, how darkly and how deadly does she speak. But needs no candles now, for dark as light, cloudy death overshades the beams of life. Contagious darkness in the air, and you are darkened in this action, sir. That the night can ill afford, the jaws of darkness do devour. We are for the dark. For some remote and desert place quite out this this landscape bare, the ill counsel of coyote's song carry across this thin Mojave air. Welcome to Desert Oracle Radio. And I believe the most eastbound location the show has ever occurred in. The best part of occasionally leaving my bunker in the Mojave, where I never noticed the pandemic happened, because there were no human souls, one way or the other, is that people sometimes have a story to tell. And it's a story they're not going to tell to their Uber driver. It's a story they're not going to tell on a Zoom work meeting. does she want to tell such stories in safe quarters? When something happens that is first person, it's kind of nice when we're talking about ourselves now and then. That out of all the miserable billions of people on Earth, for a moment at least, we're the first person. The main character. Because if you're not the main character in your life, then who is? And why? Keep this in mind, because a little bit later in the show, I'm going to ask a couple of you to come up here and share your testimony. I know that y'all got something that has happened to you at one time or another that you can't relate in polite company. I don't ask much, just a few minutes. You don't have to use your real name. We don't need your real ID. But if there's something that's been haunting you, this is a good night to share it in this dark and merry month of October. Don't think about it too much, though. If you think about it too much, you're gonna kill it before you ever give it life. A few years ago, this resident of a place called Wonder Valley walked up to me at a campfire. Told me one of the strangest stories I've ever heard, a story that did not have any parallel. You could not make a horror movie out of it, or a web series, but just the deep weirdness of it stuck with me. This was probably 4 years ago. Anybody here ever been to Wonder Valley? Thank God, thank God. Wonder Valley is the kind of place you go. One road in, one road out. About 100 square miles of the driest, most barren Mojave Desert you'll ever come across. Chocolate mountains on either side. One road in. One road out. Couple hundred homestead cabins spread here and there. They call it Wonder Valley because people who wind up there are always wandering around saying, I wonder what I'm doing here. I wonder what happened. Cinder block homestead cabins, meth shacks, rattlesnakes. Bad choices, mixed exits. You think you're leaving and then you're right there again. There's one bar, it's called the Palms. The palms were brought in. They're not native. A palm tree couldn't grow in such a place. People keep to themselves. Sometimes the only person you talk to for a month at a time is the person who drives the water tanker, who fills up your water. The wells don't work. So it was a hot night out there. And like a lot of people do, when it's real hot and the swamp cooler can't keep up, this person had dragged out one of those flat lawn chairs, like a chaise lounge, an outdoor chaise lounge. Chaise lounge just means long chair in French. Everything sounds better in French. And he fell asleep in the night. And when he awoke, there were little balls of weightless light. Little balls of weightless light that had grown seemingly up from the dry ground beneath him. And wrapped around his body and ran down his legs and tumbled off the end of the chair. And he watched them sort of tumble and roll and vanish to the east. There was never an explanation for it. There's never an explanation for the greatest mysteries in life. I want to read you a description of a certain kind of light. This is from the folkloric classic by Walter Evans Vance, published more than a century ago. It's called The Fairy Faith in Celtic Countries. William Butler Yeats wrote the introduction. Walter writes, "This account was provided by a Celtic native of the Isle of Man who also served in the House of Keys, the lower house of Parliament there, which was something that would make him more respectable at the time. About 40 years ago, one October night, I and another young man were going to a Manx harvest celebration on the Glen Helen Road, just at the Berry Farm. As we walked along talking, my friend happened to look across the river, a small brook, and said, 'Oh, look, there are the berries. Have you ever seen them?' I looked across the river and saw a circle of supernatural light, which I've now come to regard as the astral light, or the light of nature, as it is called by mystics, and in which spirits become visible to human eyes. The spot where the light appeared was a space surrounded by low hills, and into this space and the circle of light from the surrounding sides, apparently, I saw come in twos and threes, a great crowd of little beings, smaller than Tom Thumb. All of them, who appeared like soldiers, were dressed in red. They moved back and forth amid the circle of light as they formed into order like troops drilling. I advised getting nearer to them, but my friend said, "No, I'm going to the party." But after we looked at them a few minutes more, he shouted and took his walking stick and struck the wall behind us. And the vision went away. And the light vanished. Ever since reading that account many years ago, the light of nature is how I like to think of the strange otherworldly light that is often your invitation to experience the other side, when and if it shows up. In this world of drone shows and carpeting store grand opening searchlights and those eye-killing security lights people like to install on their metal buildings out in the desert, being in a place dark enough to notice the astral light, the light of nature, is a rare and beautiful thing. As no matter what you believe about alien abductions and religious experiences, psychedelic channelings, or immersive gaming, magic and witchcraft, revival tent hucksterism, Myers-Briggs psychobabble, or Hank Williams singing with the conviction of a man who truly had seen the light. No matter what you think about it all, with your rigorous intuition and your telltale heart, at the twilight between dusk and dawn, you have got to ask yourself a question. What light? A blinding light, one of those rare and purposeful lights that we are told strikes certain individuals at certain key moments in their lives. Tesla is a child in the Balkans, Philip K. Dick in Fullerton, Bob Dylan in Malibu, Joan of Arc's blinding visions, or St. Catherine receiving the stigmata from a beam of otherworldly yellow light. Sometimes I am accused of exaggerating the supernatural experiences that occur in the desert. It's true that for most of us, most of the time, being in the desert is just like being anywhere else. We got air-conditioned cars, we got good roads, we got gas stations, McDonald's drive-thrus, a whole deal. It's the immensity of the protected land, the wilderness, national forests, national parks, Bureau of Land Management land, millions and millions of acres of land that did not have enough water to support life. Lakes land that needed to be set aside as watersheds for the desert cities. But the stuff is not unique. You don't have to go to Death Valley to see a monster. You don't have to go to Joshua Tree National Park to see a UFO. There's a UFO story you don't hear much anymore that happened right here in New York City in August of 1974. The witness was an immigrant named John Lennon. He lived at a dreary immigrant tenement called the Dakota Building. And on a beautiful August night in 1974, John Lennon saw a UFO. 9 o'clock at night, Lennon wrote up the whole encounter for Andy Warhol's Interview magazine. I believe to this day there's a video floating around where he's talking about it on that patio. But for Andy Warhol's Interview magazine, John Lennon interviewed himself using one of his many pen names, Dr. Winston O'Boogie. It goes like this. Lennon says, "If you look closely at the Walls and Bridges album, out now, the album packaging, you will note, has a tiny notice saying, 'I saw a UFO.' Why don't you ask me about that?" Dr. Winston O'Boogie. "Oh, I hadn't noticed. Did you really? Were you drunk? Hi." Lennon. "No, actually, I was very straight. I was lying naked on my bed with the windows open when I had this urge." Dr. O'Boogie. "Oh, don't we all?" Lennon. "So I went to the window just dreaming around in my usual poetic frame of mind, to cut a long short story, hovering over the next building, no more than 100 feet away, was this thing with electric lights flashing on and off round the bottom, one non-blinking red light on top. 'What the Nixon is that?' I says to myself, for no one else was there. 'Is it a helicopter?' 'No, it makes no noise.' 'Ah, then it must be a balloon.' Frantically trying to rationalize it in my all-too-human way, but no. Balloons don't act like that. Balloons don't look like that. Nor do they fly so low. Yes, folks, it was flying very slow, about 30 miles per hour. Below, I repeat, below most rooftops. Higher than the old buildings, lower than the new. All the time it was there, I never took my eyes off it, but I did scream to a friend who was in another room, 'Come and look at this,' etc., etc. My friend came running and bore witness with me. Nobody else was around. We tried to take pictures. Gave the film to Bob Gruen to develop. He brought back a blank film, said it looked like it had been through the X-ray at customs. Well, it stayed around for a bit, then sailed off." "Did you check to see?" the interviewer says. Yeah. "The next day, Bob Gruen rang the Daily News, the Times, the police to see if anyone else reported anything of the sort. Two other people, or groups of people, said they too saw something. Anyway, I know what I saw." That's something you'll hear a lot when you start talking about weird stuff. "I know what I saw. Do they know? Do you know? I have myself seen a thing or two over the years. Things I will never forget. It's enough to keep me looking at the night sky, which is beautiful and mysterious and weird enough on a normal night. With the Milky Way spilling across a wide open desert sky, but I don't really know what I saw. Some people say aliens and spaceships, sure. Is a popular theory over the past century or so. You can blame the movies, sci-fi writers. You see a blinding white light on the horizon. A light that throbs like something alive. And this attracts your attention. This weird glob of light bewitches you entirely, and maybe an entity of some kind comes out and stares at you. Maybe it makes love to you. Maybe it gives you a mission, a direction. A being of pure light. It might be wise and kindly, it might be terrifying, it might be all of this at once. There's a word we have for that experience. The word is awesome. To be in awe of something beyond any human understanding. We use it like for a good taco. Well, if you were traveling a desert road and you saw such a thing until a century ago, you would generally assume you had come into contact with a god, an angel, a demon, a monster. Today you might think of a gray-skinned space alien about the height of a hobbit, but with spindly arms and big black eyes like an insect, like a praying mantis. Maybe like George Van Tassel out in Giant Rock in the Mojave Desert, north of Yucca Valley, California. You recognize a tall human in kind of a blue superhero costume with boots and a cape and long platinum blonde hair like a medieval king on a deck of cards. If we have a baffling experience with a red-eyed mystery beast, if we see a shimmering matte black manta ray hovering low over the highway, if we find mysterious tracks around our cabin, we look for evidence of an existing mythology. We look on the internet, we look on the message boards. Have you ever seen anything like this? You know what I'm talking about. It's always the same. Did anybody see this? Do you know anything about it? Does anybody know what I saw? I was just outside smoking a cigarette. I was just taking the dog out before bed. This is Desert Oracle Radio, and I'm your host, Ken Lane. Come see us in Oakland at the Starline Social Club October 21st, that's Thursday night, and Sunday night, October 23rd, in Portland at Polaris Hall. Good night from the Voice of the Desert.
Well, speaking of things in the universe, Space.com ran a headline a couple of days ago, and it went, "Astronomers discover rogue black hole speeding through distant dwarf galaxy." The article by Robert Lee includes this quote: "This is like a cosmic lighthouse lit by a wandering black hole," unquote. Well, I'm going to let you look that one up yourself, since I think we've had enough concerning news this week. Anyway, it's the bottom of the hour, and you are listening to Desert Oracle Radio Replay on KGVM, Bozeman Community Radio, 95.9 FM. We will have a song from John Lennon to close out the show today, but not yet. Let's continue today with some nature readings. Here are the entries from Kathy Katz in her book, Nature, A Day at a Time, An Uncommon Look at Common Wildlife. And I like this one. If you've been walking on any of our open meadows that are getting kind of dry right now on a warm day, you're going to be accompanied by grasshoppers. So here we go. For September 14th, she opens it with a quote from Robert Hendrickson in Ladybugs, Tiger Lilies, and Wallflowers. And the quote goes, "The very appropriate name for this common insect is more colorful in other languages. The Italian name for the grasshopper is cavalletta, little mare, while the Spanish call it saltamontes, jump mountains. For some reason, the Germans call it die Hirschrecke, which is the terrible hay thing." And then she continues, "Grasshoppers have a catapult mechanism in their strong hind legs that allows them to extend their legs faster than by muscle power alone, giving the impression that they can blast out of the grass as if from a launch pad, hence their name, grasshopper. When male grasshoppers are ready to mate, they send out courtship chirps to attract females of their own species. The high-pitched signals are picked up by females that may or may not be willing enough to mate. When a male sees a female extending her antennae in response to his song, he changes his tune to another courtship song and approaches her. In some species, the male will begin hopping around her and may even jump on top of her to begin mating before she gives her permission. He persists until she either agrees or rejects him." And then she closes this one with a quote, "Men and women have trouble understanding each other because their bodies speak slightly different dialects of survival. Some of the words are the same, but the meanings vary. Each gender has its own slang, and at times the grammar can be different." And that's from Diane Ackerman in A Natural History of Love. And the entry for September 15th is, it begins, "Locust, Disostera is the Latin term for grasshopper, and that's what a locust actually is. Simply a short-horned grasshopper. They are loners, usually living in dry, open areas. Long periods of extremely dry weather force hordes of locusts to gather, and they reproduce to such an extent that overcrowding results. The wingless nymphs begin a migratory walk during which physical changes occur in their bodies as if prompted for action, and their wings begin to grow extra long and strong. Eventually, this huge population takes to the air, consuming massive amounts of nourishment to maintain their energy as they migrate hundreds of miles, forming plagues of biblical fame." And then she closes this one with a quote. It says, "When social animals are gathered together in groups, they become qualitatively different creatures from what they were when alone or in pairs. Single locusts are quiet, meditative, sessile things, but when locusts are added to other locusts, they become excited. And when there are enough of them packed shoulder to shoulder, they vibrate and hum with the energy of a jetliner and take off." And that was Lewis Thomas in The Lives of a Cell. And from Daily Observations, Thoreau on the Days of the Year, edited by Steve Grant, for September 14th, 1856, Thoreau wrote, "The gardener, with all his assiduity, does not raise such a variety nor so many successive crops on the same space as nature in the very roadside ditches." And September 15th, 1860, he wrote, "I love to see anything that implies a simpler mode of life and greater nearness to the earth." Well, I gotta say, I quite agree, Henry David Thoreau. We are of the same mind. Yesterday, Bill and I had signed up for a writing workshop in Roscoe, Montana. Sometimes I get a little backed up on checking email, and unfortunately, I missed the email that informed me of that event being canceled. But fortunately, Bill and I showed up anyway and got to have a delightful conversation with the founder of the River Arts and Books. Here she is to tell you more. And East Rosebud Creek is also a part of the interview. I'm at Roscoe, Montana today, and happened upon a really nice little surprise. And I am going to let the person who founded this tell you about it.
Thank you so much. My name is Caroline Joan Pichot. I am the co-founder and director of River Arts and Books here in Roscoe. And we are a community arts organization focused on supporting and encouraging and nurturing the literary arts in Montana.
And how were you inspired to do this?
I was inspired because I am a book nerd and a writer, and I love nothing more than stumbling upon a wonderful little bookshop. And I live nearby, and I was pregnant and thinking, what am I going to do? I'm a self-employed person. What am I going to do in this rural place, and what would I like to do, and where would I like to raise my child? What kind of environment would I like to raise him in? And I thought, well, I would like to run a bookstore. And kind of started out with that vision, and then met my co-founder, Melissa Rafan, who is also someone who has been coming here for quite some time, has a home here, and has been spending her quality family time here. And we are both from New York and bonded over our love of bookstores. And I said, wouldn't a bookstore be incredible here? And she said, 100%. She was immediately... we shared the same vision. And so we kind of explored that idea and quickly realized that a traditional bookstore would be hard to maintain just because there's not so much traffic here. We're in rural Montana in a town of 16 people, and it would need to be something bigger than that in order to be successful. And I have a background in community organization and nonprofits. And we discussed the idea of making it a nonprofit organization, and it ultimately went that way. So we are a registered 501c3.
Oh my goodness.
Yes. And we eventually, after some time and effort and scouring the land, we really wanted it to be here in Roscoe, this place we really deeply love and kind of a gateway to the Beartooth Mountains. Mm-hmm. We were able to obtain the lease of the original cabin that was built in the Roscoe Valley. It was built in 1894 and served as the town's post office at the turn of the century, and had been abandoned for about 20 years previous to us taking it over. We secured a long-term lease and fundraised within the community and our personal contacts, and we raised $35,000 to renovate the interior, which is what we did throughout 2023. Bits of 2024, and then we opened last summer in 2024.
Wow. And your open hours are when?
So we're open every Saturday throughout the fall and winter. Mm-hmm. And then we're always open for our events, which are monthly. So the best way to find out when we're open is to go to our website, or look on Google because that's always up to date. Mm-hmm. Our events are generally weekend evenings, that type of thing. And then we have writing workshops, which are generally on the weekend. And then we're open more and have more events in the summer when the area is kind of more populated.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I will add that what you're hearing in the background is the East Rosebud Creek.
Yes, East Rosebud Creek.
Oh, it's just, this is a wonderful place. Wow. So I'm looking at the building, and Caroline mentioned how old it is, and I noticed there's a section in the middle that looks a little different from the other two. Can you tell me about that?
Mm-hmm. I'm not exactly sure when that was added. But the first section was the original cabin that the George family built. They built a second cabin shortly thereafter, and then sometime later, I want to say a few decades, as far as I can tell from kind of family lore, they connected the two. And they actually then built a larger home to the left of this property, which no longer exists. They eventually lifted the whole home and moved it elsewhere onto other land. So it's been kind of a hodgepodge of family growing and needs growing, and you know, it's been incredible to have the space open to the community because I've had several descendants of the original family come and visit and say, even one of them walked in and started crying and she said, I had Christmas here when I was a 5-year-old girl. This was my great grandparents' home and we would come out from Billings to have Christmas in this cabin and she hadn't been there since she was 10 or something like that. So it's really, it's become very special and very incredible to have space reused and reused for people to gather and connect and celebrate, basically. Celebrate this beautiful land that we have the honor of inhabiting and then celebrating our artistry that is within all of us.
Oh, I just thank you for being one of those people that has a vision and, you know, and follows through on it. Because I imagine it took a lot of work.
It's a lot of work, and you know, it wouldn't have been successful or continued to be successful if we didn't have the incredible support of the community that we're in and the community that's growing as a result of being here, because it's not something just one person or a few handful of people can do, and we've really just received so much support from people showing up to our events or donating money or helping on, you know, yard days, cleaning up, helping restore the place. It's really grown to be what it is because of the people who have come and been a part of it.
Well, thank you. And is there anything I didn't ask you that you wish I had?
That's a really good question. I think, you know, I often get asked, who do you want to come to these, to come to your place and come to the events? And the answer is we want everyone to come. We want everyone to think of this as a place that they can come, that they can use, that they can be a part of, and that they can contribute to. So I would encourage anyone who's listening to go to our website, check it out, see what intrigues you, keep us in mind, sign up for the newsletter, stay connected, and definitely come, especially in the winter. A lot of businesses shut down around here in the winter or limit what they offer, and we continue, and it's actually, there's something very special and unique about being in this small place together and connecting on a cold winter's evening. So
nice.
We're still here.
And could you repeat your information as how people can connect with you again?
Yes. So the website is riverartsandbooks.org, all spelled out. We're on Instagram at River Arts and Books, which is where we post a lot of our upcoming events and open hours. And then we have a monthly newsletter that anyone who's interested can sign up for. And that's, if you just go to the main page on the website, scroll to the bottom, the sign up is right there.
Sweet. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
By the way, driving to Roscoe, Montana is a beautiful drive all by itself. So, yeah, in my recommendation, I would say make a trip down there. It's worth it. Well, we've got some events coming up, and I'm giving you an early heads up on these. to give you a chance to sign up in time to plan to attend. First off, Valley of Flowers chapter is sponsoring a public panel discussion at 7 p.m. as part of the White Bark Pine Conference. Open to the public at Inspiration Hall in the Norm Asbjornsen Hall on the MSU campus, and light snacks are offered along with a cash bar serving alcoholic beverages. And a little more about that, you're probably wondering. The date is going to be October 7th. The time of the event is from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. It is free. And if you want to find more about it, you can go to the website, which is whitebarkfound.org/conferences/this-years-conference/. And again, this is sponsored by the Valley of Flowers chapter of the Montana Native Plant Society. There's an email. You can get more information if you need it. So, okay, I'm going to spell it out. BEESGRMT@gmail.com. And again, this will be at the Norm Asbjornsen Hall at MSU Bozeman on West Grant Street. There is also a phone number, 406-994-5413, for more information. And from Sacagawea Audubon, there is a beaver workshop Saturday, September 20th, 2025, with Claire Kirk, National Wildlife Federation Beaver Conflict Resolution Technician. It's at 9 a.m. and it goes till 12 p.m. at the Kingfisher Pavilion in the Inderland Audubon Wetland Preserve. And they also add, come and explore the fascinating life of the beaver and learn about the benefits of beavers in riparian areas and urban environments. Beavers are a keystone species because they create and maintain wetland ecosystems that support a diverse array of plant and animal life. By slowing water flow and forming ponds, beavers create habitats for fish, amphibians, insects, and birds that would not otherwise thrive in fast-moving streams. By providing shelter and food for many species, they increase biodiversity. To sign up, go to sacagaweaaudubon.org and use the Events Calendar tab to click on Beaver Workshop Event. My thanks to Ken Lane and Red, Blue, Black, Silver for their work on Desert Oracle Radio, and to the good folks at KGBM who support and make space for this show. Thank you, Gallatin Valley, and everyone for listening. Thanks to Space.com, to Valley of Flowers Chapter of Montana Native Plant Society, to Sacagawea Audubon, and to Caroline Joan Pichot. To Kathy Katz and Steve Grant for readings from their books. And my listeners, I would love to hear your travel, UFO, or ghost stories. So call and leave me a message or text about anything on your mind. The number is 406-404-6246. You can hear this program broadcast on the air at 95.9 FM Bozeman Community Radio, or you can stream it online at kgbm.org at 7 p.m. Sunday and 9 a.m. Monday. Our past Desert Oracle Radio replay episodes are also available on demand on the kgbm.org website. As promised, here is John Lennon with his song, Nobody Told Me. I'll be back next week with more desert and mountain lore for you. Until then, stay well, keep doing good things, and sweet dreams. See you next week.
D-Ball!
There's Natchez in the bathroom just below the stairs. Always something happening and nothing going on. There's always something cooking and nothing in the pot. They're starving back in China, so finish what you got. Everybody's smoking and no one's getting high. Everybody's flying.